Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Welcome to episode 47 of the PreparedX Podcast. Just before I get started, I'd like to let you know that we are again sponsoring the International Crisis Management Conference, which is April 25th of 2018 in Boston. And so we're really, really excited about this. Some great speakers lined up for it. Go to crisisconferences.com. You know, we're a sponsor there again, and you can find out all the information about the conference. So, again, check out that when you get a chance. So, onto the podcast. In this one, which is 47 now, we're almost at the half century. So, super excited. In this one, I interview Dermot McCarthy, who's the head of crisis management at Standard Chartered Bank, located in London. Dermot's 20-plus years experience in this field and had some great thoughts on crisis preparedness. We got discussing about planning, about industry standards. We got into a whole host of different areas of exercises, which was his comment, not mine, the centerpiece of the crisis management program, which was great to hear. Anyway, this one, you'll really like this one. Here's episode 47 and my interview with Dermot McCarthy. Good morning, Dermot. How are you doing today?
Sure, not too bad, Rob. How's yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Are you in London today?
We are, yes, I am. And it's a miserable, cold and wet London as per normal this time of year.
Yeah. So I was just, as you know, on the phone yesterday with another colleague in London. So and I think it was a very similar day yesterday. So appreciate the weather update.
Yeah, and it also gives us something to talk about because we do like to complain about the weather.
Yeah, favorite pastime. So yeah, but anyway, before we get started, Dermot, just for our listeners, could you just let them know kind of a little bit about your background and your career to date, please?
Sure, no problem. I suppose I first got involved in this kind of area, the crisis management, business continuity planning, back in the 90s, working for a bank based in London. I was in a projects team, and contingency planning, as it was called, was one of the projects, due to be about a 6 to 8 month project. And here we are about 25, 26 years later, and I'm still working on it. So, and so I did that for a few years. Then I moved to the local authority sector, the public sector emergency planning in London, working for the City of London and the City of Westminster. Before coming back to the financial services sector about 10 years ago, looking at business continuity and crisis management for a few international banks headquartered in London.
Very cool. So, you know, tremendous amount of experience there in the corporate sector. So our listeners will really appreciate this one. So, you know, as it relates to crisis management then over your career, are there any, you know, key principles that have stuck with you?
Yeah, good question. I think for me, the principles approach to crisis management can be best categorized under the understanding, preparation, and response element. So if you like, understand your organization, and every organization is different, what they're worried about, what they're trying to do. So you need to know what the organization is doing and what its risks are. And then prepare for what you can reasonably anticipate, as well as what you can't, which I know seems to be a bit of a contradiction, but right. There will be certain things you can pull out. You know the big risks that you're worried about. You know the big risks that are on management's radar. Prepare for those. But accept the fact that the things that are going to cause you the biggest problem are those that you can't predict. And you need to have some capacity to respond effectively to those as well.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think that's great advice as well. You know, it's talking to, you know, some people over the last few weeks about playbooks, you know, crisis management playbooks. And some organizations seem to like to have, you know, put as many scenarios together as possible. But as you said, you know, organizations are going to be flexible because if something catches them out that's not in the playbook, what do they do, right? So that's, you know, very valid comment there in terms of your principles.
And I think your reference to the playbook is a really interesting one because if you like, over the years, I've seen what is good practice or what is the demand from businesses alter. So we started off, I think, in the 90s, where you tried to have everything in your crisis plan. So whatever happened, you had it covered, even if somebody wasn't available. And that became like a massive document that was really hard to maintain, hard to access. So you saw then a flip as people went to the very focused plan, almost like a wallet card. You could just get the key people and they'll know what to do. Give them key information and let them get on with it. And now we're seeing that coming back with the playbook concept into kind of more thought through plans, more guidance on actions they should take.
Right.
Interesting to see how that flows.
Yeah, it will be. I think technology may play a big part of that as well, as from a management standpoint of the plan and the event itself. So that's great. So throughout your career in this field, you've probably worked on a number of plans and developing these plans. And I guess it was a great segue into this kind of next question. Do you find that there's some main components that make up a crisis plan, no matter where you are in terms of industry, sector, whatever it may be?
Yes, I think there are. But going back to what you're saying about knowing your organization, though, you have to design the plan for the organization. And some will have a culture where certain styles suit them better than others. So while you can use guidance and good practice to help you develop that, it should really be in line with what does your organization need. But for me, the principal elements that you need to cover are the people that are going to be responding. Who's on call? Who are the guys that you're going to want to be in your response team? And how do you get hold of them? How do they operate? Where are they going to meet? What's the conference call number? Who's going to assemble them at that point? And then how do they conduct their crisis management? What's their cycle of behavior in terms of updates, meetings, actions? And then to a certain extent, looking at the playbook, give them some guidance on the things they should be doing. Even if it's only at a very high level, at a prompt level, when you call somebody at 3 o'clock in the morning because there's something significant going wrong, they're probably not best placed to think creatively and logically. So giving them something to get them started, I think, really helps.
Right.
And then the final bit is contacts. Who else is out there that can help them? Within the organization, externally, who do they need to know might be available?
Right. Yeah, I think we're seeing that one now, certainly over on this side of the pond in the States here, whereby that stakeholder list becomes extremely important. Again, whether it's internal or external, those individuals that need to be contacted either in response to the event, right, or internally as part of the team. So that's we see the same thing here.
And it's interesting you mentioned about technology and its uses, and I think there's, although technology is something we worry about to a certain extent, it's also an enabler in a crisis management front. And there are automated call-out systems, there are crisis planning systems, there are even just the humble smartphone that you can carry your plan on.
Right.
Means that we can give people much more detail, much more support than otherwise.
Yeah.
I think the challenge for us, if you like, on the plan design front, is don't put things in there just because you can. Just because the smartphone has the memory, don't feel that you have to fill it up.
Right.
Think about what's on there. It should have a purpose.
Yeah, for sure. We always start off with an objective, right? What's our objective here? And so no different on that front. So, it's an interesting one, the regulatory kind of industry guideline question, and this doesn't come up too often, but what's your experience with industry guidelines? Have you come across anything useful? I mean, I hear organizations go backwards and forwards with various ones, the British Standards Institute, as you know, and then there's an ISO as well out there. So what's your experience with that?
I think standards are very helpful if you use them as guidance for crisis management. And that's why the British standard is particularly useful in that point of view from my perspective, because it styles itself as guidance rather than as a set of actions. If you do this every time you successfully manage a crisis, it doesn't really lend itself. It's an area which doesn't lend itself to that degree of precision. There isn't a standard way to manage a crisis, if you like. So useful as a prompt, useful as a framework within which to operate, but don't feel that strict adherence to a standard will address all of your problems.
Right.
But I'm kind of seeing those slightly differently, though, to the regulations that we have to operate under. And most of my experience in the financial services sector, indeed the public sector, which is governed by a different set of regulations, is that the regulators' approach gives you an insight to what they're after and what they're looking for. So you need to be able to achieve those outcomes. But how you go about achieving those outcomes, what's best practice for you within your organization, given what you deliver, what the risks are, I think that's a different question. So use the regulations as an insight to what they want to achieve, and make sure that you can do that and evidence it, because otherwise it can be a bit of a challenge. But I don't find that they give a lot of detailed how-to
sure.
go about it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think those organizations that are starting to kind of figure out that they need some kind of crisis management plan for whatever reason, I think they have to understand that it is specific to their environment. And you can take as many templates as you possibly can find on the web, as well as guidelines for regulations. But ultimately, you have to sit down with the team and the organization and figure out, how they fit into the strategic side of the business. And that has to, kind of integrate to that. So I guess, moving on to skills, what are some of the essential skills for a crisis management team to have?
I think really, as with any team, you're looking for that mix of skills and knowledge that will enable them to have the best impact they can as a team. So you're looking for that business knowledge. What do we do? What's our operation? How does it all hang together? Perhaps the specialist knowledge of how to run a crisis and what crisis impact might be, or details that are specific to the event they're managing, a security expert or a communications expert, depending on what issue they're trying to address. And it's that mix of skills that you're looking for. Question then comes down to how you make that work on the team. You can see whether or not you share this view, but in my view, the skills of running a crisis management team are largely the skills of running any team. What you're doing is in highly unusual circumstances.
Sure.
You're doing it under stress. You're doing it a lot of pace, if you like. Would that match up for what you've seen?
Yeah, I like that, especially your comment at the end there. We see that all the time in terms of, listen, everybody wants to be a leader in the midst of a crisis. Some do really well, others don't. I think it's about that practice. It's about getting together as a team and being confident and having trust with each other. So, very similar experience here for sure. Outside of this, let's move on to scenarios, because this is something that, everybody pays a lot of interest in to help them, prepare their teams and their organizations. I suppose, as you've mentioned, the financial sector that you've been heavily involved in throughout your career, the big one there is probably still cyber from a, threat standpoint. And of course, there are others. But what are some more of, in London or elsewhere that you've experienced other types of threats that are of most concern to you at the moment?
Yeah, I think an interesting question, and one that we should always be keeping an eye on, to ensure, going back to what I said earlier about the principles of crisis management, that we're aligning our crisis management program, our crisis management activities, to the kind of risks we can reasonably anticipate. And cyber is on everybody's lips these days. It's the risk that we're struggling to understand both how it is evolving and developing and how it might impact the organization, as well as how we should respond to it. And so it is an issue that will continue to be of interest. But outside of that sphere, I think there are some, for want of a better phrase, more traditional risks that haven't gone away and are still developing, are still causing issues. Severe weather being, I think, a big one.
Yes.
I was just reading an article on the insurance industry and the fact that somebody had reported that last year, 2017, was the worst year for insurance claims caused by severe weather globally.
Yep.
And I think that's an indication where we're seeing more events and they're having a bigger impact. And we need to be prepared for that and not lose sight of it just because it's more traditional. I think particularly in Europe at the moment, terrorism is something that causes a lot of concern. And there have been a lot of incidents over the last few years in a variety of different countries across Europe. So it's still front of mind for people, even though on an individual, even the corporate basis, direct experience of it is not that common. Right. But it's something we need to bear in mind and make sure people are ready for.
Sure.
If you like. And then I suppose technology failure. You move away from cyber into the more traditional hardware failures or software failures. We're so dependent on technology. That's part of our daily lives. It delivers an awful lot of services for us that when it fails, that causes a big issue. And we seem to have a less tolerance for downtime. You know, the loss of service because there's been an IT problem is less acceptable to customers now than it may have been historically. So that builds it as a big issue that we need to look at.
Yeah, that last one's very interesting. We hear that as becoming more common. That's that, you know, that third party critical vendor, if you will, that's there to support, you know, the organization. If they fail, or if their office is in a place that's impacted by a storm or some other event, you know, how can they respond? Can they remain resilient to support our organization? And I know, you know, some businesses are starting to really pay attention to that, again, either from a cyber perspective or just from a traditional event, because you need them to be as strong as you as an enterprise.
Indeed. I think we're looking at an increasingly complex society, and companies are in that space as well. So our supply chain is more complicated. The services that we get from others are more complicated. So understanding how resilient your organization is requires you to understand the resilience of the environment you operate in, and including your direct suppliers as well. Interesting challenge, I think.
Yeah. Certainly a big one for some organizations that outsource a ton of stuff as well. So that makes a lot of sense. So as we start to wrap up here, Dermot, as you know, here at PreparedX, our core area of expertise is in the design, delivery, and evaluation of crisis simulation, tabletop exercises, and other types of exercises. And they're really important to, obviously, you know, most organizations. But in your own words, you know, how important are they, you know, in terms of, helping the organization prepare for, anything, really?
To me, a crisis exercise is the centerpiece of your crisis exercise program. Your crisis management program, ensuring that your organization is prepared, ensuring that the people you are going to rely on are prepared. The exercise gives them that opportunity to experience in a safe environment what a crisis looks and feels like and what it might be like for them when they get the call. You can never replicate reality, and I don't think we should lose too much sleep in trying to do that.
For sure.
But you can make these things realistic and make it feel right for the individual. And it's time well spent from that point of view. But I think there are other benefits you can get as well. And you probably come across this yourself, where there's an issue that a company is trying to make sense of. There's a risk it's trying to understand the implications or how it might respond. And an exercise is a great opportunity to bring that to life, you know, bring it off the page and make people feel like what it would be, and therefore help guide their decisions and actions in preparation for that event.
Yeah, you made some great comments there, and, you know, that feeling and experiencing it. And I think that's where we find, you know, in terms of our success in designing these scenarios, you have to make it realistic to the environment. Obviously, you're not going to start burning buildings down, and you're not going to start, you know, having smoke bombs go off and things like that. But, you know, what you're trying to do, though, is just put them in that moment. And that could be as simple as asking a very specific question about their information technology environment. It may be a specific question for the public relation folks about the media and, you know, some kind of a reporter that's, you know, always a pain in the backside for them. And, you know, you're having real conversations. So that takes, you know, again, some thought in planning, but I think it's about experiencing. And if the team goes away having experienced something, they're more likely to learn, and that's, you know, the whole point of the sessions, really. So I appreciate those comments there.
Yeah, thanks very much. And I think those are common across, if you like, any organization that's doing this kind of exercise. You can see the value in people coming away with the experience and the thought process. And realistically, you only get your senior managers for maybe an hour or two a year. So
right.
You want to make sure that that exercise is as impactful as possible.
Yep, exactly right. So, and a great episode today, Dermot. Appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day. Have you got any final comments for our listeners, and how might they be able to contact you if they want to reach out?
Sure, thanks, Robert. Well, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm happy to take any questions or queries if people find there's anything of interest there they'd like to have a chat about. I should stress that any opinions and views that I've expressed today are mine and do not necessarily reflect the views of my employer.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. We know that, and we appreciate that. Yeah.
Super.
Okay.
Thanks for your time, Rob. It's been great chatting to you.
Yeah. No problem. Enjoy the rain in London.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
That's it for episode 47 of the PreparedX podcast. If you enjoyed it, please, as always, share it with your audience and do rate us on iTunes. We'd like to see some more comments and rates on iTunes and the other channels that you're listening to this on, or if it's through our blog, please comment. Love to hear from you. Until next time, goodbye.